Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Good evening, Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. Reality for the Lansing area medical marijuana businesses community continues to sink in this week. I'll be talking to a representative of a local medical marijuana association, and then also to a member of a group that says marijuana isn't a medicine and should not be allowed to be used, period. But first, the American Red Cross and its unionized workers are stuck in a battle. Workers in mid-Michigan are threatening to strike, and the organization says it could not come at a worse time. Blood reserves are low due to Hurricane Irene, and the annual September 11th Spirit of America blood drive is right around the corner. To talk about the impact of a potential strike, I'm joined by Karen Kelly, the communications director for the Ohio-Michigan-Indiana Division of the American Red Cross. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Union officials say that the agency has been refusing for months to bargain on a new contract with 280 members of the Office and Professional Employees International Union Local 459 working without a contract since the spring of 2008 and Teamsters Local 580 without one since the spring of 2009. Aren't unions justified to finally take action?
Well, I think what is happening here, Michael, for one thing, we have had ongoing efforts. We've tried to continue negotiations. During the past 3 months, I know you mentioned OPEIU and Teamsters, but during the past summer months, we actually reached agreements with six other unions. And so we're committed to continue that. We do want a fair and equitable outcome to this, but we certainly have positions that we need to uphold.
How critical are these 280 employees in mid-Michigan?
Well, all of our employees are very critical. We, as an American Red Cross humanitarian organization, everyone is certainly an important person. And so we do want to reach agreement. We really value all of our employees, whether they are union or non-union, and just as we honor our volunteers as well.
I guess what I'm asking is, what would happen then if in fact, these 280 members go on strike?
Okay, I see what you're saying. What we would do, we do have contingency plans in place. Now, our first choice, of course, would be to not have there be a work stoppage. If there is, our contingency plans would come into play to make sure that hospitals would be receiving the blood that they need during any work stoppage. And we would do that by having employees who are trained and who are not represented by the unions engaging in these actions. Those people would help us continue our mission.
So their plan is to potentially go on strike on September 7th. Are you saying that you've got a backup plan already ready to go for September 7th?
We really we prefer that they not go out, but because we are talking here about a life-saving mission, we can't wait. We have to have contingency plans in place. There are thousands of people out there whose lives depend on it. In the United States, we have 44,000 blood donations that are needed daily. And just looking at the Great Lakes region alone, which is, you know, headquartered in Lansing, we have to have 650 to 700 units of blood every weekday. So you can see that that represents an awful lot of people who really need blood.
These unions have been without a contract for several years, one since 2008, the other since 2009. How can that be? Why is nothing happening when it comes to negotiating these contracts and getting them back under contract?
Well, as I said earlier, we have been willing to negotiate and have been negotiating with them when that has been possible. There are certain points that appear to be of biggest concern. One of those appear to be health benefits. And the Red Cross has put forward contract proposals that are consistent with the pay and benefits packages provided to our non-union folks.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not asking for anything here that is any less than the rest of the employees have. We at the Red Cross pay 90% of the premiums, health benefit premiums for employees, and 80% for their dependents.
Okay.
And so that's an example where we feel it's certainly fair and certainly trying to go too far one way or another would just not make good business sense.
I'm talking to Karen Kelly, the communications director for the Ohio, Michigan, Indiana division of the American Red Cross. So that sounds quite generous, Karen. So you're telling me that non-unionized employees of the American Red Cross pay 10% for themselves for premiums and 20% for family members, right?
Correct.
So what are unionized workers? How is their health care structure?
You know, Michael, I don't have that right in front of me.
Are they paying less than 10%, you're saying?
Well, I don't know, as we're having this conversation, what they are currently paying for or what they are asking in the current negotiations.
Hmm.
But I can say that that is certainly a general point. The health benefits.
I see. So, but the essential argument is that the American Red Cross wants to, I'm going to guess, have these unionized employees pay more for their health care premiums than they are paying now.
Well, there are multiple unions, and that's why, without me looking at each individual union that we're negotiating with, I would be hard-pressed to say exactly what the different ones were, but we do feel that what we are being presenting to the unions is certainly fair. It's certainly what our other employees are paying. And
well, let me ask you this. In May, a judge from the National Labor Relations Board ordered the Red Cross to halt unfair labor practices and reimburse these unionized workers for lost earnings and benefits. How has the Red Cross responded to that ruling?
Now, was that a ruling that was made? What are you talking about earlier in the year?
Yeah, in my understanding, it involved these particular unions that we're talking about. But basically, I guess my question is, has any action been taken by the Red Cross since that ruling? I don't know if you know that for a fact or not.
Well, I don't know the specifics of it for a fact, but I do know that we take all rulings very seriously, much as we take compliance with the FDA regulations on blood safety, that sort of thing, very seriously. So we're certainly not disregarding something that is a legitimate issue that we should be looking at.
About a minute left. Tell me, how is the American Red Cross doing financially? How are contribution levels at this point, as the last several years, tell me, as compared to the last 10 years or so?
Well, I don't have comparisons right in front of me, but I will say, for example, let's just take a look at Hurricane Irene. We are estimating right now that that hurricane is going to cost between $10 million and $15 million. We do spend an average of $450 million a year on disaster relief throughout the United States. And that includes sheltering, feeding, relief supplies, for maybe 70,000 disasters in the course of a year. So we really are relying on donations from the public, whether it be financial donations to mm-hmm. help with disaster or blood or platelet donations to get that gift of life to people. So we we're a cross-section of the American people, and we're counting on them.
Karen Kelly, Communications Director for the Ohio, Michigan, Indiana Division of the American Red Cross. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, I thank you so much.